Hi, and welcome to another episode of Django Chat. I'm Carlton Gibson, and I'm here with Will Vincent.
Hi.
Today, we're going to talk about Django Rust Framework, one of the main third-party add-ons in the Django ecosystem, and the main one that you use for building APIs with Django.
Yeah, and I would, as we've discussed previously, I would say the number one third-party application you're likely to use. So as you mentioned, it's how one builds APIs, so we're going to talk about why you would do that and get into the specifics of Django REST framework.
To keep it simple, like we've introduced this term API, what's an API, Will?
So an API, it stands for Application Programming Interface, which isn't that helpful, but I think of it as the way in which two computers talk to one another. And the key difference between a traditional website has all sorts of things. It has HTML, CSS, JavaScript, all working together within Django to give you a web page. An API is just the data. So you often have to combine that data with those other HTML, CSS attributes. But why don't you give it a shot? I don't think that's the clearest explanation.
Okay, well, so the way I got into APIs was building normal websites, and then I was using web forms, and then I wanted to create a fancier form that used Ajax to submit the data and update the page without doing a full page refresh. So you would encode form data in JSON, send it off to the server. The server would give you back some other JSON, and then you'd use a bit of JavaScript to put it back into the DOM. And then from there, the other big thing that came up was mobile applications, which aren't necessarily web-based. And so they want to talk to a server, but they send off JSON. Normally JSON, it can be any encoded format, but they send off JSON, they get JSON response back, and then they use that to update their user interface some way. So it's like as you said, a data-only communication between the server and the client.
Right, yeah, and I think that, to repeat what you've said, if you want to work with a front-end framework, so something like React or Vue or Angular, you will need to, you'll be better served to use an API internally, but you can also use an API to talk to multiple clients. So the example I like to give is with Instagram. Instagram is one database that has an iOS app, an Android app, and a web app. So how do three clients talk to one database? With traditional Django, you can't do that. It's more all in one box. But if you create an API, and in that case, it would be an internal API, so an API only that Instagram programmers or applications can use, they can all speak to one another, and you can have multiple clients, multiple front-end interfaces with one code base. And this is really the direction that most websites are going these days. You know, you can start with just traditional Django, but as soon as you want mobile, or as soon as you want to add these front-end frameworks to your own application, you're probably going to switch to an API.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So if you want to build an API with Django, what are you going to use? You're going to use Django REST framework.
So today you're going to use Django REST framework, yes.
Right. So what's REST about? What's the REST? We know what Django is, and we know what a framework is. Django's a framework. It's a framework's a toolkit, but what's REST about?
Right. So REST, here's another acronym, Representational State Transfer, which I don't, just like Application Programming Interface, I don't think is that helpful. It is an architecture style only from the year 2000. Roy Fielding did it as his dissertation. It's basically a set of rules or suggestions for how to structure an API so there's some continuity to it. And really what it does is it makes you learn HTTP, Hypertext Transfer Protocol, which
that's
is the basis.
That's the thing that goes at the beginning of URLs, right?
That's right. That's right. HTTP. Yeah, look up in your browser and you'll see HTTP or probably HTTPS. The S stands for the encrypted version. So because we're on the web, you can build APIs for anywhere, but because we're in a web context, we're using HTTP, which is the way that information is sent back and forth. And REST has a number of properties that make something RESTful or not. So that would be, there's a client-server relationship, which is what you have on the web, a database talking to a user. It is stateless, which there's much we could say about that. So each request is independent, which means that it's okay if a message doesn't get all the way through, but it makes it harder to know things like, is someone logged in or has something changed to a shopping cart? You know, dealing with state is really probably the fundamental challenge, I would say, of the modern web. It's cacheable. uniform interface. There's really a whole list of RESTful things, but generally, you know, and I guess I would add on top of that, when you're using it, you're, so if you think of a web page just gives you the HTML, CSS, JavaScript. You have a what's called an API endpoint. So it's also a URL, and it'll be something like, you know, so if instead of google.com, it'd be api.google.com. And at that endpoint, you can use HTTP verbs, or excuse me, method, well, methods, verbs, same thing, such as get, post, push, put, delete.
Right, and verbs here, like these, this is the key point for me, is like all the other stuff, the stateless and whether, it's kind of interesting, but the key point for me is that the HTTP, how many T's was that? The HTTP verbs correspond to the methods of CRUD, as normally understood. So you get to retrieve a resource, you can post or put to create or update, you can delete, and these HTTP verbs say how you use it. So each resource will have a URL unique for that resource, and then the action that you perform will depend on which HTTP verb you use.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I'd like to do a separate episode just on CRUD, because I feel like CRUD, which stands for create, read, update, delete, is something that web developers internalize quickly and understand. But if you ask an average person, or you explain to them that every site basically just has CRUD with authentication, you'll kind of blow their mind. I think, you know, because if you really, you can say to them, let's look at Twitter, let's look at Facebook, let's look at Instagram, Pinterest, Google. It's the same thing over and over again. That's a real aha moment for people. And so if you, once you start building APIs, you will get that. Even with traditional Django, a lot of that is handled for you. So you might not necessarily know about HTTP. You might not know about these verbs. It's really when you build an API that it will become real to you.
Okay, fine. I mean, you know, that's all very abstract, but what does Django REST framework give us, DRF? What does DRF give us?
Right. So Django REST framework. So Django, you build a website and you say, right, I want an API. Django REST framework's third-party package, so you can easily install it. And because it intentionally mimics Django conventions, it will transform a traditional site into an API for you with a tiny amount of code, largely through something called a serializer, which I think of as really the magic, which will transform, instead of sending a web page back and forth, it will send just data, typically in the form of JSON. So I think serializers is the number one thing that's, along with HTTP, that differentiates an API from a website, and that people need to understand, you know, what a serializer is and how it does what it does. Because Django REST framework really just kind of magically transforms your site into an API, but it's doing that largely through the serializer.
Yeah, and the generic views as well. So if you want to create a view which just retrieves an object, there's a retrieve API view. And if you want to create an object, there's a create API view. And if you want to update an object, there's an update API view. And then there's generic views, which are create retrieve API view, like combine these.
Yeah, very similar, you know, intentionally similar to Django's generic class-based views, which is why I recommend people start with Django and then Django REST framework. In the same way that building an API, you shouldn't build a website first, because, you know, Django REST framework, you'll appreciate it more, it'll make more sense. You'll see that it's built upon Django itself. So I definitely recommend building a couple. If someone says to you, your boss says to you, go build an API with Django REST framework, build a site or two in Django first, and then you will see that you can quickly add on an API, but it will make a lot more sense within the context of, you know, this is all meant to be very Django-like in terms of its structure.
Yeah, and I think the basic structure of DRF is you take the model which you've got and you're very familiar with from your building your normal Django site. So you've got a model, and then you create a model serializer. And in its basic, all you have to do is declare which model it uses, and it will automatically create all the right fields for you. And then on top of that, you just put a view in place, and then the framework bit of Django REST framework, it does all the rest. It handles encoding the model data into JSON for you. It handles passing incoming JSON data if you have a post view. So it's just super for that reason.
Yeah, and you still have the URLs. Right, so you have your model, you have your URLs, and you have views for a traditional Django site. We also would have templates. There's no templates with Django REST framework because we're dealing just with data. The difference is, instead of templates, you have serializers, and the views are a little bit different, but the models are basically the same and your URLs are the same. That relies on Django itself. So it's really the serializers and the views which are different.
Yeah, I mean, and under the hood, there's these things called renderers, but no, the users, normally you would just never get there. You tell it that you want to support JSON and it would use a JSON renderer. And unless you're getting right into the advanced stuff, you never need to see that layer. That's what's super about
Yeah, so just like Django, you can get it and use it. And then if you need to go deep, you can, but you don't have to right off the bat. Yeah. We should mention, I mean, you are a core maintainer of Django REST framework, so you know that of which you speak.
Certainly, more so than I do. Yeah, well, I got into it long time ago. So I was building iOS apps in a freelance environment, an agency environment. And clients needed not only an app, they needed an API to go. They needed something for the mobile application to talk to. And I knew Django. And so I was like, well, I can build the back end. And looking for a tool which enabled me to build APIs with Django, and Django REST framework popped up. And this was version one days. And then I was following it along and using it. And Tom Christie, who was the creator of Django REST framework, he came on the mailing list one day and he's like, look, I need help. There's too many issues to triage. There's too many questions on Stack Overflow. The mailing list is too hard. So I got onto the mailing list. I got onto Stack Overflow and I started answering questions and helping out. And all of a sudden, Tom's like, oh, you know, you're here, you can be a maintainer on the framework, and I'm closing tickets and merging pull requests, and it's all, you know. And that was how I got started in open source. I was using Django and Django REST framework, and Tom needed help, and I just chipped in, you know, I just did my bit.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because you got it, because you're currently a Django fellow as well, but you got into the Django world through Django REST framework,
Entirely. And, you know, I needed to build APIs, and Django REST framework was and is just a super way of doing that.
Yeah. And I think if you've built APIs with other ways, with other frameworks, and then you try Django REST framework, you'll see how fantastic it is. If you just use it, you'll go, oh, APIs, not so bad. You know, standard functionality. It's really... I don't know how much, you know, there's a benefit in learning how other things are harder, but Django REST framework is about as easy as it gets these days to build a powerful, secure web API with a minimum of code. I haven't seen really anything that comes close. Maybe Ruby on Rails, but maybe.
I mean, we get spoiled, I think. If we just start with Django and Django REST framework, we think that's the norm. And then when something's difficult, we complain, oh, this is hard. Well, yeah, but if you tried doing this with another framework.
Yeah, yeah. So what else does people need to know? So authentication is a big one as well with APIs. And I actually did a DjangoCon talk we'll link to all about this, which was actually where you and I met in person for the first time, I think.
Yes.
We'd spoken online. So with authentication, so Django itself and most web frameworks use sessions where you have an ID that is created for the user and then stored on the server. I'll link to the docs on that. We'll probably do an entire episode on authentication. When you're dealing with an API, you can also use tokens as well as JavaScript web tokens. So instead of passing a session object back and forth, you're passing a token. There's a whole number of ways to do this. And again, the talk I go through and I give full examples of the main ways to do that within Django. But this is a big sticking point for people. I think after understanding serializers, authentication is what really hits people because you have to understand how HTTP works to understand authentication.
Yeah.
Which is that HTTP, and please correct me on this, but HTTP contains header, body, and a message typically. And the header is where the information like authentication is included because that is passed with every request. And because HTTP is stateless, you have to include it. Otherwise, you can't be sure that someone is who they say they are.
Yeah, so how do I know that this HTTP request, which has nothing to do with the previous one, is from the same person? Well, it's because they have this same token or this same identifying feature. It could be a cookie. It could be a token, as you said, of some kind. And that's the key, right? It is HTTP, the underlying protocol, is stateless. So it has no concept of a session. So we have to put
right,
this
so
on
just because you log in on the login page and then you're taken to the homepage, the site doesn't know that you then can reload it, for example.
Exactly the same with the you know, a traditional Django application. You have to have that cookie. You have to log in and the back end sets the cookie for the next request to know it's you. What I would say that if you're using an API to augment your website, right? So look like you're doing it in that example that I gave at the beginning of enhancing a form submission with Ajax or anything where they're in the browser, just use session auth. The same as the default session auth, the same cookie authentication that you always have in the browser. And then if you need some other client to come along, that's when you need to go to one of the token methods, be it JWT or OAuth tokens of some kind.
And be aware that it can be very complex.
Yeah, and there are...
a dozen third-party ways to do it. It's, you know, if you go to the official page, there's a reason why there's tons and tons of pages to do this, partly because the technology around this is a changing space with JavaScript web tokens and other in OAuth for social authentication. So it's, unfortunately, it's a bit complex right now for everyone.
Yeah, I think that's the key point, is it is complex. And when you get into authentication for multiple clients, you just have to be prepared to spend the time to do it properly and to understand what's going on and to dot the I's and cross the T's.
Yeah. And you don't want to get authentication wrong.
Well, no, right? Because
So what else? Another key point when you're learning about APIs and REST, Django REST framework, is the concept of CORS, C-O-R-S, cross-origin resource sharing, which is a fundamental security feature of the web. It basically means that you can't, by default, make cross-domain requests. So if I'm on, you know, siteA.com, it won't, by default, let things come from siteb.com, because that would be a way for a hacker to basically take over your website. So you have to explicitly give permission, which you do through CORS. So when you're setting up your API, that can often live on a different server than your front end. So you need to specifically say, this front end can access my back end API. If you don't set that, it won't work. It's a small thing, but it's something people may not have thought about if they're just coming from a web framework world where that's sort of handled for them.
Yeah, and there's a third-party package to help with that, right? It's Django CORS headers, which is super.
Django CORS headers, which we'll link to.
Maintained by Adam Johnson, who's a core contributor. And
yeah, you have to use that with Django REST framework.
Yeah, so the example is, right, you've got app.myproduct.com and then you've got api.myproduct.com, and the app.myproduct.com wants to talk to the API. It can't do that without setting the right headers, the right CORS.
Right. And again, this is understanding HTTP, where headers is this, it's almost like the metadata on a normal page where, you know, you go into view source and you see meta, you know, the title is in there and the author and maybe some other stuff. It's sort of secret information that's really important, I would say. Documentation. What to say about this, Carlton? Because, you know, an API, you need to have a roadmap to understand, so someone can understand how to use it. And this is you don't necessarily need this with a traditional website. People just click around. But an API, you know, because it's for another developer, you want, you know, for example, if you're building a Django REST framework backend and then there's a front-end engineer who's someone else who's going to be consuming it, you need to tell them what's what.
Yeah, what parameters are available, what endpoints are available, what HTTP verbs are allowed, what methods are allowed. All of these things need detailing. And back in the day, there was this idea of that they would be hypermedia APIs, that they'd be self-discoverable and self-describing. And whilst that's a noble dream, it hasn't appeared. We're left with, how can I describe it? We're left with APIs, which each one is kind of slightly bespoke, and patterns like REST let them be familiar and let them be largely similar. But there's no automatic way of learning about an API. You have to open up the documentation and look at it and read and write your client for it. So Django REST framework introduced some documentation, so the ability from serializers to generate API documentation. That's all in flux now, because over the years, what's emerged as probably the standard is a thing called OpenAPI, which used to be called Swagger. And there's lots of tooling, and this is there are other options out there, but this is the key one that's got most of the mind share. And to be honest, at this point, that's the one we need to integrate with. So we're moving from what was a tool which was called Core API to Open API. And we're in the process of doing that right now. And we can generate an Open API schema now, and that will improve. But the inbuilt docs, which are built into Django REST framework now, they are based on Open API. And in the next version, 3.10, they will be deprecated. And there's another tool called API Star, which generates, which is by Tom Christie, who's the creator of Django REST framework. And it's all integrated. And that will take an Open API schema, which Django REST framework would generate for you. And then that's a separate tool to generate the doc site. So for the next release, that will all be documented and how you use API Star, and the tools will be in place to implement that. But that will be part of the 3.10 Django REST framework.
And when's that coming out, or when's the estimate?
The aim for that is April. So, you know, it's always liable to slip, but only by a matter of weeks, not by a matter of months.
Wow. And then API Star also has async stuff included, right?
No. So, API Star is the tooling suite around APIs. There's a client that will be involved, but the async stuff is a framework called Starlet, which Tom Christie's been working on. That is a kind of micro framework for using Python in an async Python to build web applications.
Right. So just as Python 3 has async, which Python 2 didn't, and Django itself in 3.0 is going to start in some form down the async roadmap.
Exactly when Django has async support is, you know, an open question, because it depends when it's finished.
Yeah. Yeah. As with all things.
Yes.
I think it's also worth quickly mentioning GraphQL, which if you're learning about APIs today, these days, you're likely to hear about GraphQL. So GraphQL is it's different than REST. I'll take a shot and then you can try to explain it. You can use it with Django right now. There are a number of packages. It's a little bit early days, I would say, but it's very usable. So why would you do this? So there's a little bit of waste with a REST framework. For example, if you have to do three separate calls, for example, to get a user to find their posts and then to find their followers. So that's three separate call response, call response, call response over HTTP, which has headers. And so it's a little bit expensive because each of those is a distinct API endpoint with a REST framework. Whereas with GraphQL, that all can be included in one query. So it sounds like a magic bullet of just the front end person can specify what they want and then just get it. You don't waste hitting an endpoint with all the users if I only want one. But I would say we're not quite there yet. No. But you know, if it does what it says it does, then it will be the future. But I think it's a ways off.
Yeah.
What do you think?
You've described it very well. Like, so the exciting thing about GraphQL, I think, is that in theory enables clients to create their own query. They can specify what objects they want and what fields they want.
So they don't have to badger the back end. Right. They don't need a custom API endpoint for every little tweak that they want, which can drive, you know, a back end engineer a little bit crazy. So that's another nice thing, saying, oh, you just say what you want. I don't need to customize everything for you.
But there's a cost to that in that it still has to come out of the database, and there's still problems where you end up triggering the N plus one queries, i.e. if there's a foreign key to an object, it not only looks up the object, but all of the too many that it has, and you can end up making very expensive queries, and then those have to be hand optimized. And it turns out at the state of tech that we have today, that the back-end engineer is doing just as much work getting the GraphQL endpoints to run efficiently as creating. So at this stage, I have to describe myself as a bit of a GraphQL skeptic. At this stage, for me, what I like to do is I like to create a utility endpoint, which if I need a nice nested rich response, which has got the user plus all their posts from the last week, plus a follow account, I create a utility endpoint which fetches all of those and returns those as a single package. So the client's still only making one call, but it's making it to a utility endpoint which is easy to craft, and it's done on the back end, and it can be optimized. And for me, the really exciting thing about all this async Python stuff is these kind of proxy endpoints, because they're nice and lightweight, and the async stuff really can get a benefit there, which I don't necessarily see in the more traditional endpoints, so to speak, at this stage again. But I like to create an endpoint like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good to know the costs. I mean, so after I gave my talk at DjangoCon, I was asked for advice, and I'm not currently working on a project at scale, so I'm not sure if it's my place to say so, but I would say I would not change an existing project from REST to GraphQL. If you have a new field thing and you want to try it out, I would say give it a try, but I wouldn't do it on a major project, and I certainly wouldn't switch something over to it, because I think maybe people aren't aware of that proxy endpoint approach too that you're mentioning.
Yeah, perhaps I need to write a number of posts about that. But what I'd like is Django to bring its to get at least async in the view layer, so that it was easy to write these kind of proxy endpoints in Django itself, and then it'll be super to write a blog post about that.
Yeah. So the takeaway is, REST isn't dead yet. There are lots of tweaks. There is a cost to GraphQL, but it is a very cool technology, and I've seen some really mind-blowing demos, but it's a work in progress.
Yeah,
so.
And like, you know, this wave of technology as it advances, and they always say that you want to be slightly boring or slightly conservative in some of your choices. For me, GraphQL is just a little bit too near the breaking edge of the wave at the moment for it to be jump onto for a major project.
Yeah, yeah.
For me.
So, yeah, yep. So, how does one learn this, Carlton? There's the official documentation. What are you often asked this question, or are you more like high level dealing with, you know, the pros making commits to it?
Most people who come onto the GitHub issue tracker already have used it. So because I hang out there, that I don't get to answer the question about how I learned this. But yeah, the official tutorial. I always say, look, go through the official tutorial. We've talked about in a previous episode about how it can be a bit high level if you're an absolute beginner, but if you're intermediate, if you know your stuff, then go through the tutorial, and by the time you've done that, you'll have a good idea of what REST framework can offer, and then start building your app, start building your endpoints, and just try. And for me, there's certain patterns or anti-patterns that I see where people put too much logic in views, or they're not using the serializer API in the right way. I think you've got to learn those with time, but ask questions. There's a mailing list, there's Stack Overflow again, there's all the other resources. But just try.
Yeah, we'll link to the mailing list. And yeah, in terms of... So I wrote a book on this last year in part because at the time I wasn't aware of any books on the topic. There have since been a couple, which we'll link to, but you know, my book's a good resource. The first couple chapters are available for free online, restapiswithdjango.com. I think the challenge when you're learning is you build the API, and then if you're building something solo, then you need to know a JavaScript front-end framework. So that's, you need to know JavaScript, you need to know the front-end framework, you need to learn about how to pass like the auth tokens back and forth. And so I'm often asked, which one should I choose? Which is a tough thing to answer, because you really just need to pick one and go with it. If someone came to me totally said, which one should I learn? I don't really know much. I would say the big three are React, Vue, and Angular right now. There's also Ember. There's some other ones.
Yeah, I'm
but
a big fan
would...
of Elm, which is a whole different approach.
Yes.
I love that. I love that mainly because it keeps me out of the whole JavaScript churn battle. I can just stick with Elm, and I don't have to worry about what the latest changes in JavaScript land are.
Yeah, there's something to that. I mean, React in particular changes dramatically. So if I had to give advice, which I would be hesitant to do, I would say pick React or Vue, knowing that they change really fast. And I would just recommend sticking with one for a while. When you're a professional developer, often you'll be on a team and you won't have to do the back end and the front end.
Right.
The challenge is if you want to, build a blog with Django and React or Vue, you kind of have to learn all this. And there, as far as I'm aware, there isn't a great guide to all that, because it's really three separate things. It's Django, it's APIs, and it's the front end framework of your choice.
Yeah, it's too much.
So be aware that it's too much. So, you know, be aware that just knowing how to do APIs is a huge skill. And while it's fun to try to do stuff with front end frameworks, there's a reason that's a separate job.
Yeah. So for me, there's this the exact distinction you drew is between, if you're doing it professionally on a team, you won't be building both parts yourself. So you can focus on the API, or you're on the front end, and the interesting discussions you'll have exactly what the endpoints are and what the data transmission formats, what the JSON looks like. That's all great stuff, but you won't be building both bits. If you're building a solo project, I'm going to end up sounding like an old man again, but do you really need an API? Can you just get away building a Django site which does a static request response return, renders the page on the server, gives you back the page, and then sprinkle on some JavaScript and the odd API endpoint just to enrich it a little bit? But to drop, as a solo developer on a solo project, to drop everything to go for this single page, full front end thing, I think you're just biting off way more than you can chew. If it's a learning exercise, no problem. But if you're trying to build it as a viable, actually get something done, consider the traditional approach. It's not so bad. In fact, if you get something built that works versus not get something built that works, it's much better.
Yeah. As with so much technology, the challenge is how do you iterate on it? And I also urge that caution. Try it out, but do you really, certainly a solo project, do you really need an internal API? Yeah, think about it, and maybe you just need a couple things, not the entire site, to be switched over. It's a challenge. I mean, I was, one of my takeaways from DjangoCon last fall, which is my first major Django conference, was it struck me that most Django people don't know JavaScript well at all. And that's because they don't need to. I've worked more very early stage. I've worked on solo projects. So I'd say I'm intermediate level with JavaScript. And I was feeling, wow, I'm surprised these folks don't know JavaScript better. But it's because they know Django and Django REST framework and all the rest of that, I'm sure, much better than I do. It's really, you know, once you go in a professional role, you're gonna be specializing. For a solo project, keep it simple. No one cares if you have an API or not on your project. And there's a reason why teams work on this stuff. It is a lot of work, even a simple site, to have it be super smooth and fast and performant.
Yeah. Are you looking at, you know, half a dozen people on the back end, half a dozen people on the front end, and there's no way you're building it all yourself. And somebody who is a React specialist, and their whole job is building that front end and getting that right, and to expect to do that and to do the API and, you know, and deploy it.
Yeah,
it's just not feasible.
You're going to be swimming in the deep end and you're going to be confused. So I gave a talk at Django Boston last year talking about how to use Django and React together. And actually in my book, I do give an example of how to add React, which is the same way you would add a front end framework. So there's a little bit there, but it's very rare to find something that covers both an API and a front end, because they're different worlds and they move so fast. So just be aware of that when you're learning this. Be aware that maybe you want to, you know, don't blame yourself if it's confusing, because it's confusing for the pros as well.
And for each project, decide, is this a learning exercise, in which case I can be more experimental, or am I trying to ship a product? Because if you're trying to ship a product, be conservative, stick behind the curve, go with the known technologies, and you'll get further.
Yeah. 100%. So let's try to wrap up here. So how can companies help support Django REST framework?
Okay, so they can sponsor it, right? And so Tom Christie runs a company called Encode.io, which is open source, sustainable open source software development. And you can become a sponsor of that, and you can get your logo on the front page of the Django REST framework docs, and you can get some publicity from that, especially if you're hiring Django world, that's useful.
I see companies on there all the time that I didn't know were Django shops I think that's the number one way to hire a Django developer, I would say, is to sponsor Django REST framework, because chances are if they're doing Django, they're doing backend work, which means APIs, and everyone is checking that site, the official docs, all the time.
Yeah, and it gives you a good profile boost within the community, I would say.
Yeah, it's good karma, because there's many more people using it than sponsoring it.
But it's more than that. It's more than good karma. It's good business in that you, for a very small, for a very small sum, if you know, if you're a company of any size at all, you've got payroll every month. And for a very fraction of that, for loose change, basically, you can add to the sustainability of one of your core dependencies. And that, that's, that costs, you know, that's nothing. That's just good business.
Yeah. Anything else we want to mention?
Well, sponsor the Django Software Foundation as well.
Yes. Yes. All right. Well, as ever, if you have questions about this episode, please let us know on our website, djangochat.com. Give us inspiration for future episodes, and we'll speak to you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye. Join us next time.